Tuesday, March 21st, 2023. I'd like to call the Policy and Strategy Committee meeting to order and acknowledge that we are Mi'kma'ki, the transitional territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Am I getting an echo?
Yeah.
I don't know. We have a, is it that that would give me the echo? Oh, it's gone. It was, okay. So are there any, I'd like to acknowledge we have regrets from Councillor DeLong and Councillor Haysom. Are there any announcements, acknowledgements, or recognition? Councillor Greek?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Pam Hubley. Deputy Mayor Hubley.
Oh,
just
we're good.
Letting you all know, the latest edition of New Germany Connections has come out this past week. I have paper copies here if you'd like to read it, or check it out in color online at newgermany.ca. And community talk is, it's the best issue to date. This is all made by volunteers. It's paid for by those who take ads in the newsletter and gets mailed out throughout addresses in Springfield, New Germany, and Barth's Corner.
Thank
great
you.
Great read.
Thank you. Are there any other announcements, acknowledgements, or recognition? Okay, so before I look for the approval of the agenda, I believe we have items to add. Tom?
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to add two items under the added items, which is number 11.
Mm-hmm.
The first would be the issue with the development at Crescent Beach and the Coastal Protection Act and regulations. And the second for discussion is a letter regarding outstanding building permits that we would like to send to residents. We'd just like to update have council with respect to the contents of that letter and seek some input.
Okay.
So that would be 11.1 and 11.2.
Okay. So could I have an approval of the agenda with the added items? Councillor Moore, a second? Councillor Wynott, all those in favor? Motion passed unanimously. Approval. A motion for approval of the minutes of February 21st, 2023. Councillor Vino, seconded by Mayor Bolivar-Getson. All those in favor? Wonderful. Business arising from minutes. Councillor Greek.
Thank you. I just have a question regarding a follow-up from my request from the October 18th policy and strategy meeting. We had made a motion to direct staff to provide a report regarding noise bylaws and cost implications for administering and including what nearby municipal units have in place and their effectiveness, and further to provide RCMP procedures when receiving frequent noise complaints. So I'm wondering when we can expect to receive this report. Many reports or many complaints come from people who live or visit around lakes, and we're nearing lake season for many people in our area.
Thank you. Deputy COO Alex DeMar.
Yep. I don't have a date for you. It's certainly on our work plans, but we haven't been able to produce a report yet.
Okay. Ahead of schedule, but I'm going to ask Kent Walsh from the LCLC to present the 2024 budget. Good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Awesome.
Budget and the capital.
It was in the agenda package.
Yeah, perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, great. It ends up being a lot of numbers, so please interject with any questions. I'm happy to field them. They're often the most interesting part of this. So I just wanted to start by pointing out that the column, there's the 2022-23 original budget and then the forecast. So that forecast is made up of actual numbers up to November and then the forecasted numbers kind of continuing on from there. So just going through on the revenue side, I'll just, if it's suitable to everyone, I'll just kind of point out some of the highlights as I see them and places where there's variation year over year or any kind of narrative notes. And if you have any questions, I'll obviously field them for everything. On the arena side, so you'll see an increase in arena revenue projected for 23-24, so we'll be open the entirety of the summer this year. So those additional months make up that revenue, as well as a slight rate increase in September. The rest of the revenue side is fairly consistent year over year. You will see a change this year if you're familiar with the document from last year. So in the bottom line, outdoor pools and lakes. So for the past number of years, we, the LCLC, have provided lifeguards and instructors for the lakes for MODL and the outdoor pool for the town. And those numbers had been kind of historically rolled into the LCLC staffing complement budget and the pool revenue. It's a little bit artificial to include them in the pool revenue, and as we provide more of those services, those numbers increase. So this year you'll see them broken out. So the revenue from outdoor pools and lakes in July and August at $69,789, and then we'll see that on the expense side as well. Any questions on that revenue side?
Continue.
On expenses, thank you. On the expenses, so advertising and promotion, you'll see a bump in our 22-23. So we did an RFP and solicited the services of a marketing firm to help us with naming, procuring naming sponsor for the building. So that will kind of get back in line to previous years in 23-24. Facilities, repairs, and maintenance. So that line is through the course of the large construction project that we undertook this year, we unearthed a lot of issues that we had to deal with, emergent things, outside the scope of that construction project. So again, that'll kind of fall back in line. That facilities, repairs, and maintenance, it's a significant portion is preventative maintenance, but an equally significant portion is the emergent things that come up that have to be dealt with the mechanical and structure facility. Insurance, so this year I broke out the insurance as well. The insurance in previous years had been lumped in with facilities, repairs, and maintenance. We have the same insurer. We've seen a considerable increase year over year. I'm sure you're familiar with it. So that is our rate. IT licensing and support. So we ended up having to replace the audio system in the arena this year, as well as one of our servers that controls our building automation. So that was kind of an unexpected expense in 22-23, but we'll fall back into line. So that IT licensing fees and supports, that's our MJSB, as well as the fee we incur for the registration platform that hosts Connect to Rec, MODL and TOB registration, all of those good things that we do. And utilities. So utilities, we expect to see a reduction in our overall power consumption as a result of the construction that we've done over the past 3 years, or primarily in the past year, I guess. The offset there is that we'll be bringing our dehumidification unit online, which is an increase in power, so there's a little bit of an offsetting relationship there. So that's why we see an increase on that line.
Any questions? Councillor Vino?
Thank you. The advertising promotion expenses that were a little bit higher due to hiring the company or firm you had mentioned, was there ever a company or name secured for the naming rights of the facility?
No, we haven't had success on that yet. Yeah, we continue to work on it, but
Mayor Balabrigetza?
Did you go through the special events at the bottom?
Oh, I didn't, sorry.
No.
So special events, we're targeting, it's challenging at this point, but we're looking at special events revenue to the tune of $63,000 with expenses of $50,000.
Okay. I guess one of the questions that I had here, we haven't applied for any special events for in the future. We haven't written any bids or anything for future years ahead. We will be looking at that to host other national, international events.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are working on a bid for the 55-plus games and, you know, in constant conversation with Hockey Canada to seize those opportunities to host events of that nature.
And year over year, we have the forecast, but we don't have the actual for the 2022-2023, do we?
Well, we haven't finished the...
But to date, that's not on here.
The 22-23 forecast was current at the time when I delivered this to the LCLC board. So that's up to November, because this came to the board in January.
So from a financial perspective, should municipalities to be expecting a deficit in the financial, in the budget from 22-23?
Yes.
And that amount of, because I don't believe that has been sent to the municipalities.
Can I send it to you? Because I would be pulling it off the top of my head at this minute.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because that's something that we're supposed to have once we know that.
Yeah. Our February financials will be done shortly, next 2 weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. And at that point, if it's okay, I'll send you the kind of projected, because that'll be the most accurate number.
Yeah. Thank you. Because I don't believe, Elena, you have any of that in as our Director of Finance for our budgeting purposes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it would be reflected in all of those financial packages which go out to the board and the kind of staff.
Yeah.
But I can definitely highlight that in a note to everyone.
Okay.
Councillor Roycall?
Yes, I'm just wondering regarding the car chargers for the electric vehicles. If we know how we, like, I'm sure that part of the expense is writing off the cost of the installation over time, but I'm wondering how much of it is also the use by others of those chargers, that because they are free.
So you're talking capital now? Like the
I'm sorry.
No,
yeah.
then that's totally fine. If there's no other questions, I'm happy to skip ahead to that.
Yeah. Yes, it would have been.
That sounds good. So this capital, I'll go through it kind of maybe in more detail, but with respect to the car chargers as they exist on the capital line, there, you know, the I guess underlying intention is that we would get a significant portion of those offset through grants. So that $40,000 represents the municipal contribution to the car chargers, and then we would secure other funding as well because there's quite a bit out there. It seems like a very plausible reality. So that would just be installation. So that would be the units and the kind of upgrades to the electrical wiring and kind of infrastructure to get it there. So that capital number would just be the installation, and then any revenue generated from them would roll forward into kind of that miscellaneous line or somewhere on the revenue side of an operating budget.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Councillor Staton?
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple questions on your capital. I'm assuming that you have quotes on these figures.
Would you like me to go through the capital a little bit more and then just kind of to...
That's fine. I have a question, too, about your charges. Is the intent to start charging for those charges, or is it the intent to keep them free?
So that would be a policy decision at the board level, I think. We broached that conversation in our February meeting, and we'll return to it in April, because I think that's going to be an important... that kind of user rate or fee for service kind of model is going to be an important question to ask, as well as the type of chargers, before we move forward with any kind of procurement.
So we can see that on the board agenda for April, can we?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'll just keep my other questions until
So maybe I'll just go through. I'm obviously happy to jump back to the budget if there's any need for that. So just on the capital, so to be clear, there's no ask for money on the capital budget for this year. There's a carry forward, so we've received $1.3 million from the federal provincial governments for our construction project, as well as some other provincial money and some efficiency Nova Scotia. So we're carrying that money forward to fund this. This is just a list of kind of those projects. So pool maintenance, it is 10 years that the pool has been in operation, and there are some guidelines and some facility kind of milestones that have to be met with repair and maintenance on the pool, including some grout work and things. So that's a 10-year kind of deal on that. The website is an upgrade that's been kind of on the list for a while, and hoping to close it out this year and complete that. Car chargers, as discussed, that's $40,000 represents a portion. We would look for matching funds from other granting sources. Carpet replacement in the library, pretty self-explanatory. The carpet's worn out. Emergency light battery replacement. So again, that's just the battery. The batteries in the emergency lights have a lifespan, must be 10 years, and so they're due for a replacement. Roof maintenance is just an ongoing kind of preventative maintenance line to address some of the deficiencies that exist. Tile repairs, so that's throughout change rooms, aquatic change rooms, galleria. Kind of there's a lot of damage and deficiencies, and so we need to do some repairs and come up with some long-term strategies around how to deal with those broken tiles. Office and meeting room furniture, so that's just kind of, you know, general upkeep, replace the old, get some new stuff in there. Arena mechanical, so that's a bit of a catch-all, but there's a number of things we need to do to mechanical systems, so air handlers, and we had, I don't know if everyone knows, but we had a puck hit sprinkler head in November, which set off the sprinklers and flooded the ice and things like that. So that includes covers for the many, many, many sprinkler heads that we have in the arena to prevent that from ever happening again. Electrical lighting and IT, some of our, like, you know, our things are just getting old. Some of them can be fixed, but some of them need to be replaced. So ballasts and lights that we can't get anymore, things like that that need to be swapped out. That also includes some outdoor security cameras and things of that nature. And then outdoor gym equipment.
Any questions? Mayor Bolivar Getson?
Yes, back to, I guess, a few of these items. And, yes, the charging, there was quite a discussion around the table on the charging docks outside, and depending on whether they go to a fast charge or to the 10-hour or whatever it is, slow charge, that was going to be looked at in that. The roof maintenance, if you've gone into the facility, you will see a few buckets in certain places. And it's been an ongoing issue with trying to fix a few of the continuing leaks on the roof. This has been a problem from day one with what started in the library and has been in different areas. So there's not a lot, but there definitely is still some areas that need to be fixed. Lighting, too, I believe one of the things around the lighting was not being able to get the parts for the lighting that we have and switching them out from one spot to another spot where you could use what we have in a smaller area, but you can't get them to match up to what we have in the bigger areas. And the facility is only 10 years old, and this is how fast technology and everything else is changing. When you look at the tile in the facility, if you've been in the facility and you walk down the galleria along the glass where it goes down the ramp, you will notice a definite drop-off, not a drop-off 6 feet or anything, but a slant in the tile where they're breaking down. So it definitely needs to be addressed to see what's happening there in the facility to make sure there's nothing structurally doing this. So a lot of the issues, things that are on here are definitely things that do need to be addressed. And if you go on our website, you will see where it definitely needs the revamp and the interactive part to the website.
Councilor Vino?
Thank you. In the pool maintenance cost on the capital expense side, does that include fixing the splash pad?
It doesn't, no.
Is there plans to address that before, let's say, purchasing outdoor gym equipment?
Yeah, I think the question at this point is whether it needs to be engineered or... So it's been an ongoing conversation, certainly, and the solution isn't entirely clear, or the scope of the solution isn't entirely clear.
Just to go on record, this is something I'm hearing from my residents, especially those with younger people, and getting that splash pad up and running. And if I may just add a comment, I've spent a lot of hours at the LCLC the past 5 days with the Gary Wenzel tournament, and it was so great to see the facility packed as it was. I happened to also go when there was a magic show going on, and there seems to be a lot of momentum right now with the LCLC coming off that family day and March break, and it's good to hear that positive feedback from the public. But that splash pad getting up and running would be a great feature as well.
Yeah, so. And maybe I can just kind of articulate that issue. So in the original design, and maybe it's a known, maybe you know all this, but in the original design, the water from the splash pad is drawn from the buffer tank for the from the hot tub, from the therapy pool. So as soon as the splash pad is run, the temperature drops to tap water in the hot tub, and then it takes about 9 hours to heat it back up again. So that's the issue. And ultimately the solution is to move the splash pad onto town water and just have that be, the source for it. And on the engineering side, it's a question of whether the infrastructure that's currently there can support just hooking it up to town water. So it's an ongoing issue.
Councillor Statton?
Oh. Can I just comment on that piece before, if you don't mind? So my understanding that we were going to look at that piece at some point when we had the pool drained to see if we could do something. So I actually made that statement in a public meeting here the last time that I thought that was being addressed. So there is no money in the budget to do anything with this, so we will not be running the splash pad piece?
It's not clear. So the original intention when we upgraded the chemical controllers was to have that done. And the plumbing kind of trades that were on site weren't able to kind of confirm that it was just a switch out. And so the question now is like how we, whether it needs to be designed by an engineer.
But it's not in the budget. So we're going to go a whole year without operating the splash pad? Is that what we're saying?
It's not in the budget, so.
All right. I didn't realize that. So, no.
Good. Councillor Statton?
Thank you. I have a question. When I ask you if you had quotes on some of these expenses, and my question is about the outdoor gym equipment, and I'm just wondering what you can install for $20,000, because the installation and certification is usually as much as the equipment costs. So I'm just wondering what the plan is for that $20,000.
Mm-hmm. The plan was to take some first steps and get a few pieces in place that would make up a large part of a larger kind of complement.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Kent, you can continue. Do you have more?
No.
I'm sorry. Councilor Moore, go ahead.
Well, I think I had 3 meetings so far at LCLC, so I'm still very green. But as for the splash pad, I thought also that we were looking at something in this year's budget. So in that case, there's no going back right now to take something out and put something in, is it?
Well, the reality is that we're dealing with the surplus from our previous capital.
Right, okay.
So this was kind of a work plan, and
right.
Certainly there's still parts of the construction project and change orders that are still coming in, so there's still changes to that.
Right.
But there is very plausibly remaining money that could be dedicated to the splash pad. So, yeah, I'm hearing you. I think it can be elevated on the kind of list of priorities,
yeah.
And we can get into the investigation, certainly, and figure out a moving forward.
To be right now, like I said, being kind of new, but not new, I think I would have rather spoke more about not putting the outdoor gym equipment in the capital budget than taking that money and putting it towards maybe something that's already in place, like the splash pad, that mm-hmm. needs to be looked at.
Okay.
Anyway, so... Yeah.
Yeah, we can. I can raise that in the level of priorities, certainly, and,
yeah.
and get it dealt with
in a
timely manner.
Councilor Haysom, do you have any questions? Okay, thank you. Anything else, Ken? Is that everything?
Not for me.
Okay. So are there any other questions or comments? Okay. Well, then, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good day, everyone.
Okay, so no consideration of correspondence, referral from council staff. We're going to go down to staff reports, the finance department, and I believe we have our director of recreation, Trudy Payne.
Elena.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. How about Elena Wenzel, director of finance? I don't even know why I had Trudy's name there.
You looked
anyway,
at her.
This is revision to MODL policy 006, loan guarantees for community organizations. Now that we have, I'm on the right track.
That's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair. So if you recall, Council was at their February 28th, 2023 meeting, reviewed the ask from Riverport Electric Light Commission. They were looking for financing. And at that time, you made a motion to direct staff to make amendments to our policy MODL 6 for loan guarantees for community organizations. So we have amended and attached that new policy for your consideration. The policy hasn't been reviewed since 1999, so there were significant things that we thought perhaps should be changed in this policy. The old policy referred to guarantees for community organizations. We don't have any authority under the MGA really to do that. We do support those organizations through tax exemptions, operating and capital grants. So we decided that we would take out the word community and replace it with the word qualifying. So we put that throughout the policy. We kind of divided it up. So now there's an eligibility section. We changed the word fire departments to be fire and emergency services providers registered with the municipality under policy MDL 36 to kind of cover off who could qualify as a fire department. We added Riverport Electric Light Commission as a qualifying organization. Then we also changed the amounts. So the loan guarantees right now were a total of $500,000 that the municipality could have out in total. We moved that up to $1 million. We think that's, based on our past experience with loan guarantees, our risk exposure is probably pretty low, and that each organization is subject to a maximum amount. So the maximum amount used to be $100,000. We're suggesting making that $250,000. We know the cost of capital projects have increased substantially since 1999, and we just thought that perhaps that would be a better number for them. We know the policy is clear that the qualifying organizations must provide asset security to MODL by way of a first mortgage, prove that the loan's in good standing, and they also have to ensure the asset for at least the value of the guarantee, and the loan guarantee cannot exceed 10 years. So based on the legislative authority in the MGA and the provincial legislative authority for Riverport Electric Light Commission, we're recommending these changes.
Do we have any questions for our Director of Finance? Okay, if there aren't any questions, I will ask Councillor Moore if she'd put the motion.
Certainly. To the Chair and members of Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that Policy and Strategy Committee recommends to Municipal Council that Council accept the changes to MODL Policy 006 as presented and hereby gives 7 days' notice of its intention to approve the proposed amendments at the March 28, 2023 Council meeting, and I so move.
Seconded by Councillor Bell. All those in any discussion? Mayor Bellaver-Getson?
I guess I just want to comment that this is definitely a step in the right direction. If we look at the price of fire equipment and what fire departments are asked to put up for BA, for example, or even turnout gear, bunker gear, the cost of this stuff has raised substantially over the course of when this policy was put in place. So although $100,000 is a lot of money, it's not a lot of money in respect to the type of equipment, fire trucks, everything else that the fire service have to provide to keep our residents safe. So I fully support this.
Thank you. Councillor Staton.
Thank you. Just a question for Elena, if I might. You want to raise this to $1 million level. And what do we have now for outstanding loans? I'm not asking for names. How much the amount of outstanding loans we have right now?
Well, actually, the name is public because it's in our financial statements. Okay. We have to report on our loan guarantees, and we have one for Blockhouse Fire Department for $100,000. We did have one for Martins River Fire Commission, but they only used it as a temporary borrowing measure, and theirs has been paid off. So we only have $100,000 owed right now in loan guarantees.
Thank you.
Until it's gone.
Only when they pay off the loan that we've guaranteed, then our liability disappears. So until their loan's paid off, it sits.
Thank you. Any other questions? Councillor Bell?
I don't have a question. I have a comment. I think this is a really good example how we could have a discussion in a financial committee meeting where we wanted to have changes reflected in the new policy. And when it's presented to us today, it has encompassed everything we asked for, that we really don't need to have a discussion now. And I want to thank you very much for listening to what we were saying and incorporating it into the policy.
Thank you. If there aren't any further questions?
Question.
All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
I don't have my mic on. We're going to move on down to 9.2.1. LaHave River Strait Pipe Replacement Program, the closing report.
Do I have to share the screen from here to have that visit, or can everyone see on there? All right, good morning and thank you. It's an exciting moment for me personally, presenting on the closing report is what's been a multi-year program for the municipality and my sole role here over the last 5.5 years. So this morning I will be providing a final update on the LaHave River Strait Pipe Replacement Program, specifically summarizing our progress over the last construction season, but highlighting our successful completion of the program. And I will also touch on our ongoing responsibility for the next 7 years as it relates to systems that we installed under the program. So just stepping back to the start of our 2022 construction season, we laid out some targets to accomplish in that construction year. So certainly wanted to install all remaining systems that we had outstanding. So that number was 65. We also wanted to make sure we were keeping our expenditures within the application budget, so coming in below our budgeted figures, and also this year close out the program. So over the following slides, I'll just show you that we have successfully achieved these targets and all of our program objectives. So looking at a summary of the properties that are contained within the wastewater management district, we have a total of 1,737 properties that were contained within that boundary. So at the end here, we have 357 systems that were installed on qualifying properties under the program, which leaves the remaining 1,380 where we had received confirmation that they did not need to participate in our program. So I just want to review how we got here, because we started with a lot of properties and we were able to finally narrow it down to those two categories. So the first thing we did was a record request and search of our residents within the wastewater management district, asking anyone who had confirmation of a system by way of a document to bring that forward so that we could start narrowing down the numbers and to where we needed to focus our attention. So we also carried out an internal record search in addition to requesting records from the public. And we also had Nova Scotia Environment conduct a search of their own records for properties within the wastewater management district. So through our request and our search in conjunction with Environment, we received 670 confirmations. We had 183 residents come forward voluntarily to acknowledge that they had a straight pipe and needed to participate in our program. So that left a remaining 884 properties where we weren't sure what was happening on those sites. So we had to launch our inspection program, which we wrapped up in 2021. So in total, we carried out 884 inspections. Of those 884 inspections, we found another 174 that needed to participate in our program. And then we had the remaining 710 which had a system of some sort in place on the property. So this inspection program was a critical element in locating all the qualifying properties to ensure that we could say we successfully achieved our program objective of removing all the straight pipes by 2023. Here we are. We had anticipated having some more robust support from our partners at the Department of Environment. We did have a memorandum of understanding in place which outlined our commitments and those of Environment and responsibilities under the program. Despite this MOU, unfortunately, we didn't receive as much support as we had anticipated. It turned out that our bylaw provided us more authority to access property and investigate than their own level of responsibility, which they would have held under their own acts and regulations. So there was some challenges there. We had entered into this expecting more support than what we did receive. There were a handful of files we did transfer over to Environment to seek support from those that were resisting participation. Of the just under 10 we transferred, there was one that was a success story, but the rest I instead got creative in bringing about compliance with the property owners. I just wanted to highlight that we do have one file outstanding. We have a qualifying property. Owner signed up and we installed a system, but then they failed to connect to the system. So the system is there. It's been there for 3 years. The Department of Environment has the file and they have not pursued it at this time. I have sent a correspondence reminding them that under the MOU they have until March 31st to bring that property owner into compliance. I did receive a reply last week that they will be contacting the owner for the first time. So just looking over sort of the progress throughout the 5 years of construction, we have our installation numbers of the 357 systems we installed, how many we installed each year. So the objective was to space those out over time to make our targets achievable, and we were successful in accomplishing that. So it's a little hard to see because it is quite an expansive area, But this is just the boundary of that wastewater management district as a reminder, and anything you see in the yellow there is a installed system under the program. So just looking specifically at our budgeted figures for this year, we did successfully come in again under budget, despite unexpected cost increases over the course of time as a result from market conditions changing. As we progressed through the program, we managed to still maintain our budget figures and come in under budget again this year. Just wanted to then look at overall for the project in total year after year. Under our funding agreement, we had just over $15 million allocated to the program. There's a difference, of course. You can see our overall program figures just under $9.6 million for the 5 years that we ran the program. So the difference between our application budget and our final value, we entered into our application budget. We were very close with estimating the average cost per system. We had estimated a higher number of straight pipes than we actually ended up locating and needing to replace. So we went in with a value of 600. We assumed 600 existed, and we have about 60% of that, which is the 357. So that's the difference between what was allocated under the funding agreement and what we actually ended up spending. So we had 60% of the 600, and we spent 60% of the budget. So for the launch of the program and doing that application budget, to all the staff that did that, they were right where we needed to be to be successful here. So just looking ahead, while the program is closed and there's no more active enrollment or installations, we do have responsibility for the next 7 years. So under the contribution agreement with the provincial and federal governments, the municipality is required to take responsibility for all the systems for 7 years after they're installed. So over time, the number will drop off because it's 7 years from the date of installation. So we started installing in 2018. And our last year, of course, was this year. So up until 2029, we will have responsibility. We will be running an annual maintenance program, so the municipality will be making sure that all the systems are maintained as required. The property owners do pay for that maintenance on the final tax bill and in the year that the maintenance is conducted. If any issues do arise that we cannot confirm are a result of owner negligence, then they are to be corrected by MODL at our cost. So just a note on water quality testing. In 2017, pre-program, before we had started installing systems around the wastewater management district, there was water quality testing carried out by Blue Nose Coastal Action Foundation along with testing locations in the estuary. There is a proposed addition for council to consider to the operating budget that Coastal Action could return and complete testing now that the program is finished, and this new testing could offer some insights into the effectiveness of the program in lowering the fecal bacteria levels in the estuary. So just in summary, while the LaHave River program we can say was not without its challenges, we can regard it as and celebrate the program in its entirety as a success. The inspection program was a very ambitious undertaking, and the municipality successfully gained access to all the properties. All our required installations were achieved prior to the deadline, and all our program expenditures remain below the approved budget.
Thank you. Excellent. Councillor Bell, you have a question, comment?
Thank you. I do have two questions, please. You identified that there was one property that had an insulation and chose not to hook up. Has that system been entered into a payment scheme, or have they withheld payments?
From my understanding, they have been. There hasn't been an issue in terms of withheld payment. They just are not.
Well, that's a strange one.
Yes.
My second question, you have shown mapping there of properties that received an on-site system. It's not in the agenda package, but of 357 properties, do you have the figure, the numbers that were on the west side as opposed to the east side? It would take me a long time to count them, but if you have that figure, not identifying the individual property like it is on the map, but do you have a ratio?
I would have one very quickly. I don't have it right now to speak to, but it wouldn't take me more than a couple minutes to put
I think, Councillor, why not one? But but anyway, the fact is this is very good news, but I would like to be able to reflect in my own mind east versus west. Thank you.
Mayor Baller-Getson?
I think they're all winners. I think everyone's a winner at the end of this project when we look at taking 357, putting in 357 approved sites. So that's a win-win for everyone. Straight pipe free by 2023, we made it. It was a long, hard-fought battle in some cases. And I guess I don't know if it would have been possible without the team that we had working on it. And I know, believe me, that there were good days and there were bad days with putting these systems in. So, again, hats off to the team for doing this. We set the balls in motion for it to happen, but without the staff behind it, it never would have been accomplished. And we never would have been able to reach the deadline. And when you look at the amount of systems over the course of the 5 years... of installations from 65, I believe, to 77.
Yep.
It was pretty even each year to make that happen. And with all the inspections that was carried out and everything else, like, the data speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. But again, hats off to everyone. This is a huge accomplishment. Hopefully we can continue to keep the LaHave River clean and, I guess, instill that on everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Haysom?
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you, Maria, for that presentation and some really excellent work that's taken place, a huge accomplishment. I just wanted to touch on the last points that you made about water quality testing. I know that Blue Nose Coastal Action had presented to us, and I think that their initial testing, perhaps they didn't have enough data to provide us with any accurate information moving forward. So it's just sort of something to keep in mind as we look at that. But regardless, I think we know that if we're removing straight pipes from the LaHave River, it's a huge accomplishment and it's making a big difference. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Alex?
Thank you. During her presentation, Maria mentioned that she had to get creative. There were many occasions where Maria had to get creative, and I thank Mayor Baller-Getson for recognizing the staff team that worked on it. But Maria deserves some special attention. She single-handedly made sure that this project happened, and it would not have happened if she wasn't here. In addition to being a project manager, she also served as a private investigator, a social worker, a diplomat, a pipe wrangler in advance of hurricanes. She dealt with hard-nosed contractors trying to pull the wool over our eyes. She was a problem solver. She had a level of calm and professionalism in the face of some really trying circumstances that I truly admired. And I think that... Thank you.
Thank you. I was sitting here thinking, this is the best presentation I've heard since I was sitting around this table. Congratulations. It's awesome.
Just wait for my book launch.
Oh, right.
Stories from the LaHave.
Yeah. Excellent.
No visuals, maybe a couple. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll move down to 9.3, Administration Department. And I believe, Alex, you have Anti-Racism Committee an update.
Yes, so there's some material in your package which has been making its way towards councils for quite some time. Early on, I think it was during the early days of the pandemic, there was some discussions about developing some anti-racism efforts in various municipalities on the South Shore. Some of our neighboring units have established a local committee, but there have been discussions for a number of years about creating a regional initiative. We do expect that there is provincial legislation coming down, which will require, similar to the accessibility legislation, action from public bodies, including municipalities, on addressing anti-racism in our communities. The town of Lunenburg was one of those municipalities that had gone out on their own and developed a committee. They had also hired a consultant to do some work on how they could make their committee effective. And there was generally a feeling that working individually with municipalities was not the right approach. So the town of Lunenburg generously offered to have their consultant work on giving advice on developing a regional body. So the consultant completed their report. They handed the work over to the CAOs, who had some more conversations with the mayors and wardens. Chester led the work of putting together the draft documents in front of you, but it's proposing the creation of a regional anti-racism function. So very quickly, I'll give an overview of what that proposal is, and then we'd be happy to answer any questions about it. Essentially, it would follow a similar model as the regional accessibility function. So it would establish an advisory committee for council, which would include representation from each of the five partner units in Lunenburg County, as well as some community representation and some Indigenous representation. The nominations for the community reps, just like accessibility, would flow through the mayors and wardens for recommendation to each of the councils. And it would be supported by a single coordinator position. So there'd be a staff support housed just like accessibility in the District of Chester. What's being proposed here would be a two-year term, so it's essentially a bit of a pilot project to see if it produces the results that they're hoping for. The total budget for year one, including the staff position and all the support for the committee, is $134,620. And the proposed cost sharing is based on uniform assessment. So MODL's portion would be $67,165. We have a couple of draft motions for the committee to consider in terms of recommendations to council. The first one being approve in principle the terms of reference. There are a couple of issues still to clean up there, but essentially the structure of the committee can be seen from those terms of reference. We're also looking in the second motion for direction to have the CAOs prepare a memorandum of understanding similar to the accessibility MOU, which would create the structure. And so that would come back to council along with the finalized terms of reference for final approval. And then looking for confirmation of MODL's $67,000 share of the year one budget.
Do we have any questions or comments? Councillor Staton, go ahead.
Thank you. Question about the employee. If you're setting up a board with councillors, outside representatives, what's the purpose of having an employee on staff? Is it to write reports? Is it maybe you could explain that purpose?
Absolutely. So one of the functions would be to support the committee. So just like Ellen Johnson does for the accessibility committee, ensuring that they have information so that they can make decisions, so they have some more context. They're not operating in an absence. But I think another significant portion of that would be to help coordinate and spearhead initiatives for the local governments themselves. So as you see, like Ellen comes and gives quarterly reports to the municipality. She'll occasionally come to council. She does work like coordinating training. She provides input before we launch a project or begin a capital project, looking from an accessibility lens. So the anti-racism coordinator would provide a similar function. They would be doing things like providing policy audits, or when you're looking at launching a new program, have you considered barriers to inclusion before you launch that? So portion of it is for committee support, but I think a larger portion of the work is helping the municipality actually do the work of removing barriers that have kept those underrepresented groups from participating in local government.
Are there any other questions? Okay, then I will ask if Councillor Bell would put the first motion on the floor.
Thank you. To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommends to Municipal Council that Council approves, in principle, the terms of reference for a regional anti-racism and anti-discrimination committee as presented. I so move.
Seconder? Councillor Haysom, is there any discussion on the motion? All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
Motion passed unanimously. For the second motion, I'll ask Councillor Vino if you'd be prepared to put that on the floor.
Certainly, thank you. To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommends to Municipal Council that Council give direction for the CAOs to develop a memorandum of understanding to be presented to each municipality for approval. And I so move.
Seconder? Seconder? Councillor Moore, thank you. Is there any discussion on the motion? All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
Motion's passed unanimously. So I'll ask Councillor Greek to put the third motion on the floor.
Thank you. To the Chair, Deputy Mayor Hubley, and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommends to Municipal Council that Council approve a two-year term shared position with the partner municipal units based on the funding formula and budget presented, with the Municipality of Lunenburg share being $67,165 for 2023-2024.
Seconded by Mayor Bolivar-Getson. Is there any discussion on the motion? Councillor Haysom?
Thank you so much. I guess I'm wondering if this is a two-year term, what's in place to evaluate to make sure that this program is working the way that we want to? How are we going to measure success? And has that been, is there something in place for that?
Yes, that's a good question, Councillor Haysom. As far as I'm aware, there hasn't been any criteria established at this point, but that's an excellent point to consider for the MOU.
Okay. Any other questions? All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
Yes.
Motion's passed unanimously. So we're going to move down to 9.4, the Planning Department. Repeal and replace MODL policy 065, divestiture of surplus land. And I believe Liz. Thank you.
Does it work? It does. Okay. So I'll be discussing some revisions to policy, modal policy 065, divestiture of surplus land, for your consideration. So I'm just going to jump into some background on what brought about this revising of policy 065. So the purpose of the policy is to help guide council through the divestiture of municipal land and to ensure an open and transparent process. The policy is authorized by several sections of the MGA that cover a variety of methods of divestiture, depending on the quality of land or how it was acquired by the municipality. So the issue that arose was that the acceptable methods of divestiture for surplus lands were not as clear as they could have been, and this issue was highlighted when council rejected a bid on a parcel of municipal surplus land that was to be sold in accordance with the policy, and this would have happened in July of last year. Council rejected the bid due to confusion over the provided definition of abutting property, as the bidder's property did not share a common boundary with the municipal surplus property. So Section 51A of the MGA uses the term abutting property to refer to the sale of municipal lands that are of an insufficient size or shape to be feasibly used for any form of development. And in these cases, the land would be offered to an abutting property owner to be consolidated with that abutting lot, which implies that the lots share a common boundary. But this was not the case for this parcel or for the specific bidder, which is what caused confusion for council. So council then directed staff to add a definition of abutting property to policy 065. Staff determined that the issue with the policy had to do with the overall clarity of the policy and specifically the available methods of divestiture. So staff focused our attention on clarifying the acceptable methods of divestiture and linking them to the appropriate sections of the Municipal Government Act rather than adding the definition. Staff recommends that the old policy be repealed and replaced with the new revised policy. We believe that adding a definition for the term abutting property is unnecessary because there are only certain scenarios where a property is offered to an abutting property owner, and it will not be the default option. Plus, the Municipal Government Act already states that in those scenarios, the land is to be consolidated, which implies the properties must share a boundary. Otherwise, they couldn't be consolidated. So staff's recommendation is that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend Council to hereby repeal Modal Policy 065 and replace it with a revised Modal Policy 065 and provide 7 days' notice to Council. Just for some justification, the new policy will help avoid confusion in the future by clearly outlining the municipality's options when divesting of surplus land, as well as linking those to all the corresponding sections of the MGA. Furthermore, the changes ensure that the full range of available options for the divestiture of surplus land are utilized, which will increase the likelihood of residential development and will encourage infilling of existing residential areas as a result, which just means encouraging density where residential areas already exist, and it will also increase the housing stock, which aligns with goals of the municipality. So in conclusion, clarity issues within the policy 065 divestiture of surplus land arose after council rejected a bid on a municipal surplus property, citing confusion over a provided definition for abutting property. Council directed staff to add a definition for abutting property to the existing policy, but after reviewing the policy in detail, staff drafted a recommendation to repeal and replace the existing policy in favor of a clearer and more concise version that clearly outlines the acceptable methods of divestiture and the corresponding sections of the Municipal Government Act. Staff's recommendation to the Policy and Strategy Committee is to recommend to Council to hereby repeal Modal Policy 065 and replace it with the newly drafted Modal Policy 065 that does not include the right of first refusal to abutting properties. Therefore, definition of abutting is not required. And the goal is to avoid any future confusion over the policy and to increase the chances of residents building on surplus lots.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Councillor Staton?
I have a statement to make. When this piece of property that you're referring to was turned down by council, it's because the abutting property owners did make an offer, as well as a property owner across the street. And because the property owner across the street had a few more dollars on it than the two abutting property owners, we couldn't agree on what abutting property meant. Okay? I just want to clarify that because there's nothing about that in this definition or in this explanation. So I want to make sure that that's clear, that we refused it because of that reason and that abutting property meant different things to different people. Okay? And I have a question with that. And do we get carbon credits for green space when we do our carbon credits? Is there anything there that includes green space? Well, we're interested in reducing our carbon footprint. We're interested in reducing the amount of fuel and energy we use. So is there anything there about having green space that we would get some credit for?
Jeff?
Go ahead. So currently today, no, we don't have any, there's no credit system set up that our green space is calculated into that. But when council looks at, like, divestiture of properties, like, those are things that, you know, the value, like, you have to consider what's the value of this. And it might not be valuable for recreational purposes. Maybe it's not valuable for economic development purposes. But when you look at determining whether or not a piece of land is surplus, you know, that's a factor that council could consider, would be like, well, maybe there's a wetland on that property and we want to keep that property in, like, a conservation in its natural state. So that could be a consideration when you, before you declare a piece of property surplus.
Thank you. Mayor Balabragetza?
I just want to go back to the definition. My understanding as to what this is currently doing is defining abutting, whereas abutting physically has to be touching on one side or another. Is that correct? Yes. So that a landowner across the road would not be an abutting landowner. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So the clarification is there in the policy that states that it has to be physically touching in order for it to be. So any discrepancies that council may see in that are eliminated. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to add just, so the abutting, that is for when properties are of insufficient size to be a usable lot. And that comes from the Municipal Government Act. So the rewrite of this policy, what this policy does not have is the right of first refusal. So if you're if it's a usable building lot and you abut it, this is not giving that abutting property owner first right of refusal. This policy opens it up to everybody, whether, you know, anybody in the municipality or anybody that bids on it. It's not giving for only for the, like, the only time would be is if it's an unusable lot, like, and typically those are like small pieces of land that you couldn't really do much with. Those are the only time that it would be opened up to the abutting properties. But basically, this gets rid of the first right of refusal. Just wanted to make that clear.
Councillor Moore?
Okay. So there's two properties. One of them is surplus land. It's big enough for a building lot. The people abutting it, the people next door abutting it, offer a certain amount of money. And someone, say, two communities down the road offers a certain amount of money. So do we take the highest bid, or do we look, we take the highest bid without considering the next abutting property? We only consider the next abutting property if the building lot, if the lot isn't big enough to do anything with. Have I got that right?
Yeah, so if it's a building lot, yeah, like typically you'd be looking to award to the highest bidder,
which could be the abutting
which property. Could be the abutting. Okay. It could be somebody from New Germany bidding on, yeah, a property in,
yeah, okay,
somewhere else.
Okay. But what is, can I may again
go ahead,
what is how does that get determined whether it's useful? Is it the size of the lot, whether it could have septic or well, like?
Yeah, so before you declare anything surplus, yeah, like, there's some criteria that you'd look at. And right, some of, so I don't know how many unusable lots we have. But typically, like, yeah, like, it wouldn't be big enough for a septic or to build a house on.
Right.
Like, some of the things that we've seen in the past were, like, when a road gets realigned, there's, like, a little wedge, yeah, shape. Mm-hmm. That gets part, and just because I'm thinking of one in, I think it was in Oakland, where we had a little small sliver of property, you know, council might say, even though it's unusable for a building lot, you might say, you know, we're not that's not surplus. We're going to keep that. So it comes, those properties will come to this table,
okay.
And council will need to determine, is that surplus? Does it fit into this okay. unusable category? And if it does, then this policy says if it's unusable, here's the way to declare that surplus and dispose of that property.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Statton?
Thank you. I think it's a good clarification of how to look at these surplus properties. And I didn't like the word abutting because that pitted neighbor against neighbor. I know in the past, or when we had a procedure, we sent the letters out to neighboring properties that this property was for sale. Is there going to be a change in how these properties will be advertised or how they'll be put up for sale? Will we still be sending the letter out to a neighborhood, or will we be making it market-wide or municipal-wide? How do you see that working for selling surplus properties?
Yeah, so I think the difference would be that you wouldn't be sending it to the abutting property owners and giving them a first right of refusal before you sent it out to everyone. You would be sending it out mm-hmm. saying, council's declared this property surplus, put that notification out and allow anybody to bid on that property. So this policy no longer has that first right of refusal.
Thank you.
Councillor Greek, go ahead.
Thank you. In your mind, would you envision this happening like one time a year, so people are expecting to look for the list, like the tax sale list, or sporadically throughout the year whenever council deems a land surplus, or condense it all at once?
Yeah, in the policy, it's worded that upon receipt, so somebody, like we might not do it this year, we might not do it next year, unless, of course, we had a project where we were like kind of what we were going through last year. It would be based on somebody submitting a request. So somebody like, hey, Ms. Palladay owns a piece of property in New Germany. I'd like to buy it. And then council would say, well, we're not interested. It's not surplus. Or, yes, we'll consider selling that, declare it surplus, and then go through that process. So unless he had, like, on a regular basis, it would be on a per, like, request basis.
Councillor Vino?
I'm having a little difficulty understanding this policy, so I apologize if most know the answer to this question. If it goes out to others, not just the owners on the left or the right, would it then be council that picks who gets that from a list, or does it always go to the highest bidder of the property? Like, how is that determined based on this policy?
Yeah, you would send out that notification, like that notification saying, hey, here's a list of surplus properties, and you'd want bids back. I'm thinking that you would award it to the highest bidder unless there was, for some other reason in council's mind, that, you know, there was justification to sell it to somebody else that wasn't the highest bidder.
Just to follow up, so to clarify then, it is of no significance if you live on the left or the right or across anymore.
Correct.
With the changes to this policy.
With the changes to this policy, it removes that first right of refusal of the immediately surrounding properties to bid on it.
And that's what was in the old policy. So by removing this, it allows anybody to bid on the property.
Yeah, in the old policy, although it wasn't clear in the old policy, like the practice that happened was that it was, in a way, a first right of refusal. So it was giving the abutting property owners the first right of refusal. And this policy says everybody gets the equal opportunity to bid.
Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, Dave Waters, you have a question, comment?
Yeah, just as I may, this is a little bit different than, say, tax sale land. You have to understand the selling of land is not a, we have a piece of land, it goes out, we get a bunch of bids, we take the highest bidder. The opportunities for land sales come and go. So when we have an opportunity for selling a piece of land, they all come back to council for council to make a decision. I would assume council is going to pick the highest bidder, but there may be a purpose that it's not necessarily the highest bidder. So what I'm saying is not a standard black and white selling of land. It depends on the opportunity. Okay. If that makes it any clearer.
We have Councillor Oikle, Councillor Haysom, Councillor Vino, you wanted to comment for the go for. Go ahead. Yes.
And just with that, I brought up one more question. Is there any benefit or point system that if you're a municipal resident as opposed to a non-municipal resident, is there anything like that in the policy, or would that be just left for council to decide if you have any advantages to bidding on a piece of property if you're a municipal resident?
I believe that would be up to council to decide.
Council decision? Good. Councillor Oikle?
So what we were just talking about is only for land that is usable for a house or for something, correct? And but land that is an odd shape and can't be used for anything, it's just a little sliver, that's a total different procedure. Those first get the abutting people first get choice of that. Is that correct? Is that what I understand?
Yeah, so all three, or there's a few options that are aligned within the policy. One of them refers to those kind of small slivers of land. That refers back to a specific section of the MGA. That's how you would go about divesting of that land. And then for any other opportunities that come where it's like a parcel that's like would have the capacity to be built upon, that would be just opened up to the general public. Yeah.
Councillor Haysom.
Thank you so much. And sorry, I guess I'm struggling with this a bit as well. So with the change in this policy, abutting landowners no longer have the first right of refusal for a lot which could be developed. Is this correct?
That's correct.
But they do have the first right of refusal for a piece of land that couldn't be developed or is considered as we said, an odd shape or too small for anything, then they would have the first right of refusal?
I'm not sure if it's necessarily the right of first refusal. It's just that if there's a sliver that would otherwise not be used for anything else and it's touching their property, it's just offered to them to be consolidated with their property. They might say no, but they have the option just to consolidate it with their existing property.
Okay, so I guess I'm concerned that in an effort to sort of clarify what we mean by abutting, what we've done is done away with the right of first refusal to purchase surplus land for the person whose land is abutting that surplus land. So can you clarify that for me, or am I getting that wrong?
So they would, like anybody, they could still, like if a larger property came up for sale and it was touching someone's property, they're still well within their right to put a bid on it. It would then be up to council to decide who's like the highest bid. Like if the person directly beside this parcel bid the highest, council could still pick them. It's just that it would also be opened up to everybody else. Like it would be advertised in a way that anybody in the municipality could see it.
Okay.
We have a question from Councillor Moore.
Well, I'm just thinking. okay, so there's a piece of property next to my property, and I want to purchase it for a building lot to put a granny suite on, or most granny suites are attached, or a house. Okay. And I'm not picking here, but like someone from Germany that invest in land in Canada or whatever has bottomless pockets
and can put a high price on this piece of land, but me as the abutting property owner has the lower bid. I hope council, whatever council sitting here, has the mindset that, you know, the people next door probably are going to use it more than someone that's just going to hold it and land bank it. But will the property owners, the abutting property owners, be able to counter? Will they be able to counter offer? It's okay. Not in this policy.
Yeah, so okay. I'm going to take that because this isn't a policy question. This is a procurement question.
Okay.
And so council generally cannot cherry pick offers because you will be sued.
Oh, good.
By the unsuccessful bidder.
Right.
So if you put it out to tender, you're generally accepting that you will award the contract or the property or whatever it is you're selling to the highest bidder.
Okay.
If you do an RFP, you have more flexibility because there's scoring in an RFP. Okay. Generally, a tender is how much are you willing to give me, and I will sell it to the highest bidder. Mm-hmm. So it's you have to be cautious if you want to try to limit the acquisition of property. There is federal legislation currently that prohibits the acquisition of property by foreign nationals, but it does not apply here.
Okay. All right.
It applies in larger cities, applies in Halifax, but not in rural Nova Scotia.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move along. I'm going to ask Councillor Staton to put the motion on the floor.
Thank you. The chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend to Municipal Council that Council repeal and replace MODL Policy 065, divestiture of surplus land as presented, and hereby give 7 days notice of its intention to approve the proposed amendments at the March 28, 2023 Council meeting.
Seconded by Mayor Balaver-Getson. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay. All those in favor? Councillor Haysom?
No, I'm not in favor.
Do I have to say one? Motion carried. Councillor Haysom against. Thank you. Learning curve for me. Okay, so we're going to take a 10-minute break.
Awesome.
It is 25 after 10, 23. We'll come back at 10:35.
Okay.
Hey, want to go outside for a recess, Pam? Oh. Yeah, let's do it. Let's get some fresh air. The sun's out.